Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I search my mind and I ask how any religion on earth can teach people to kill those of other religions. It's incomprehensible to me that a religion can be given to killing those who are not practicing their way of meeting or reaching God. It's incomprehensible to me. It is astonishing to me that a religion can teach to kill. To kill because the people don't practice your religion. It's incomprehensible to me that something like that would be called a religion, or that somebody could take a suicide bomb and knowingly go out into a community of children who might be going to a pizza parlor or to a discotheque or to a shopping mall and know that that explosive device has nails in it and ball bearings and pieces of metal, and know that those pieces of metal are going to tear the flesh of a mother's child. And do it with joy, believing that they're going to meet God for doing that. It is so alien to every fiber of my being that there are no further words that I could say other than, how could this be on this same planet? When you have a world filled with nurses and doctors who spend their every day trying to heal the sick, to mend the broken bone, and then you have others who spend every waking moment trying to plan how to kill and maim and destroy, it's astonishing to me. Here we are in America today after 9-1-1, when we had enemies who crashed planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, killed 3,000 of our fellow citizens, and God knows what agony the people who didn't die instantly suffered as they tried to get out of that building. Some of them leapt from the building. The media has still not shown you those photographs, throwing themselves out of the building. Think of the pain that was felt by your fellow Americans on that night, is what I say to myself. And think of it, that we have an enemy so committed to death and destruction and hate that they would do things like this, and how we are not all united to defend ourselves is what puzzles me, astonishes me.
Savage.
I'm not such a smart guy. I'm just another American who understands that we're at war, who understands there are strangers amongst us who hate Christians, hate Jews, and hate freedom and hate America. And they don't belong here. They don't belong in this country. What's this crap that you got to give them opportunity? That's the same rubbish we heard in the 60s when there were radical groups killing police and blowing things up. They didn't need opportunities. There are some people who are just no good. These are no good. What are we going to do with the no goods? Going to sit and wring our hands there and give them therapy? Don't be ridiculous. It's coming from somewhere. Where are these Muslim youth getting this hatred from and this distortion? They're getting it out of their mosques is where they're getting it. That's where the problem lies. And it's time for every mosque in America to be hardwired into the FBI on a supercomputer. That's what has to be done. Step one. That's correct. What do you mean freedom of religion? The mafia has used freedom of medication for years to conduct their business in doctor's offices. Why don't you watch The Sopranos? These are loopholes in the law. So they go to the doctor's office and they can do, doc, leave the office, and they do their business. Then we have freedom of religion. So you mean the guy's teaching them to hate America, to hate infidels, and we're not supposed to say anything because that's religion? That's not a religion. It is not a religion, I told you. We have to take a deep breath and define what a religion is. When you say religion, you normally think of Christianity, which teaches love thy neighbor, turn the other cheek. Or let's say you think of Buddhism, which is a religion that today teaches peace. In fact, Buddhism was not always a peaceful religion. Buddhism was once a very violent religion, but I don't want to bore you with the details. I'll upset too many liberals in Hollywood and New York who have beads on their wall and inhale incense and think that all Buddhists are peaceful. But I don't want to, you know, ruin them today. But today, Buddhism basically teaches peace. Hinduism teaches peace. Judaism teaches peace. But there's a religion that apparently doesn't teach peace. They teach that everyone else is an infidel. What does the word infidel mean? You have no fidelity to what? To Allah and their religion. And what should you do to an infidel? Well, apparently they believe that these infidels need either to be converted or something more. But even worse, the question was really quite interesting, posed by the Pew Research Center. The nationwide survey, one of the most exhaustive ever conducted of American Muslim attitudes, asked the questions, and we got the answers. The most shocking responses came when those surveyed were asked whether suicide bombings and other violence against civilians, that means you and your daughter, in a mall, can be justified, quote, in order to defend Islam from its enemies. So if it's not a state-sponsored terrorism, but a religion-sponsored terrorism, if it's a religion that declares war on non-co-religionists, you have choices. So I turn the question back to you again. Rationally, what should the government do to protect us from the 26% of Muslim youth who approve of suicide bombings?
Savage.
Let us go to the callers. Muhammad in New York City, you're on the show.
I was discriminated in the job. They made me resign because they did not like the length of my beard, okay? And I got something else to say to you, Mr. Savage. That would you say about the Muslims? You infidels should be happy to have us here. We are helping you. If you follow the Prophet, then you can only do well. You know, even with your diet that you talk about, if you listen to the Prophet, you wouldn't eat the garbage you eat. You would eat the way the Prophet says to eat, and you would not have the problems you're talking about.
You mean everybody in the Muslim world is healthy?
What?
You mean everybody in the Muslim world is healthy?
People who follow the Prophet and eat the way the Prophet...
Does that include people who have their heads cut off and their hands cut off? Are they healthy when their hands are cut off?
There are reasons for them to have their heads cut off and their hands to cut off.
So you would like to see that law brought to America of cutting heads off?
When you commit certain crimes, yes. You need to have your head cut off.
Well, that's why people like you don't belong in the country. You belong somewhere in the 14th century. It's not in this country, Muhammad.
You don't belong in the country.
All right, well, we'll see who wins. Something tells me I'm going to win, not you. Something tells me if you and your ilk continue this crap, you're going to wind up on a fast jet to Egypt.
But an agent of the Zionists.
Don't you think that you're going to get thrown out of this country one day? They're going to find out you're a sleeper cell. Don't you think it's going to happen?
No. This country will become one with Muslims. That will either be. People will understand that Islam is the religion.
Yeah, it'll happen. Sure, it'll happen in the next world. So, Muhammad, when you get to the next world, are you sure you have 72 virgins?
That is nonsense. We don't believe that.
Oh, you don't believe that? Who does believe that?
Fidel say.
Fidel Castro believes it?
I don't know what Fidel Castro is. He's a communist.
So what is it? You want to convert all Christians and kill all Jews, Muhammad? Is that your plan?
I want to convert all Christians and Jews and others.
Oh, and what if they don't want to convert? Then what?
Then they will be dealt with.
How will they be dealt with?
They just will not be on the same level as the Muslims.
So you're above everybody. You're superior to everybody. Is that why you put your women in burqas?
Our religion.
Is that why you cover their faces? Is that a mark of superiority?
We do not have racism in the Muslim world.
You don't have racism? How come you treat your women lower than cattle and dogs?
I'm not talking about races. You're talking about women.
Well, why is it that you beat up your women?
Women are protected.
Why is it that your religion permits you to beat your women?
We do not beat them unless they need to be beaten.
I see. But your religion does permit it, of course.
And you, of course, are the
one who decides whether they should be beaten or not, right, Muhammad? Because you have such great wisdom.
Husband who decides, yes.
Yeah, husband. Okay, I know you're pulling my leg. You're not even a Muslim. I can hear it's a fake voice. It's a fake voice, the whole thing. And you know what? You're not doing Muslims a favor with this, Muhammad. So now why don't you break out into your regular American voice? I'm not taking the bait. I can hear a fake accent when it's thrown at me. Come on. Speak English, Muhammad. You can do it. Let's have a big laugh together. He's gone. I knew it was a fake voice. it was fake. And, you know, he didn't do the Muslim people a right, a favor there.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Any topic is fair game here. Halliburton, Savage definition. Okay, Columbus, Ohio, Fatty. Fatty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael. I haven't read your book, so forgive me if you've addressed this already, but how do you define culture and more specifically American culture? It seems like it changes. Right. I mean, pretty much every few years or so.
No, it actually doesn't. The people change, but the culture doesn't change. That's the whole, you see, this is the problem that most people are having. They think that multiculturalism should change America. It should not change America. The core values of American culture are set in stone. The people change, the racial makeup changes. But in the old days, they would assimilate to the American culture. Now, what is the American culture? I have defined this. The American culture, when I say borders, you know what that is. When I say language, you know what that means, English only. When I say culture, many of you have been hoodwinked into believing that we're a multicultural nation, which we are not. We are a nation of many races and many cultures. That is true. It has been true from the beginning. But in the past, people would come over and become Americans. Now they come over and they want you to become them. They want you to speak Spanish. They want you to act Muslim. They want you to give up going to the church and going to a mosque. This is not going to go on in this country much longer. We're going to have a revolution in this country if this keeps up. These people are pushing the wrong people around. Just watch Extreme Fighting and you'll see what the white male is capable of. That's all I can say to you. Just understand why Extreme Fighting is becoming popular in this country. Because the rage has reached a boil. If they keep pushing us around, and if we keep having these schmucks running for office, catering to the multicultural people who are destroying the culture of this country, there will be a revolution in this country. Guaranteed. The people, the white male in particular, let me talk specifically. The white male in particular, the one without connections, the one without money, has nothing to lose, and you haven't seen him yet. You haven't seen him explode in this country. And he's still the majority, by the way, in case you don't know it. He is still the majority. No one speaks for him. Everyone craps on him. Bush sends him to Iraq to die. People use him for cannon fodder, and he has no voice whatsoever. He has nobody speaking for him. So he goes to these extreme fighting events. Take a look at them, and you'll see what the white male is capable of. And you're going to find out that if you keep pushing this country around, you'll find out that there's an ugly side to the white male that has been suppressed for probably 30 years right now, but it really has never gone away. But that doesn't answer your question. What is the culture? It's very simple. The culture of this nation is built upon several founding documents. One, I'm sure the ACLU will find a problem with. That's called the United States Constitution. That's a founding document. The Bill of Rights, founding document. The Bible, that's correct. The Bible. The rules of the Bible. The entire nation was built around the rules of the Bible. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. But the Christian rules. The Christian Bible built upon the Jewish Bible. So if you want to ask me what the founding documents are, those are the founding documents, and that's the culture of America. Now, did I say that Buddhism shouldn't be practiced? No. Did I say Hinduism shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. Did I say that Islam shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. But in the past, the other religions were practiced, but they did not try to dominate the nation, which is fundamentally a Christian nation. It is not a Buddhist nation. It is not a Hindu nation. It is not a Muslim nation. This is primarily, has always been and always will be, primarily a Christian nation. The rest of the people certainly are welcome to practice their religions, but they're not welcome to deny Christianity its place in the family of man.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the
is a song from another time.
See
When the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Joe Stafford singing, what a beautiful song. God in heaven. All right, turn it off, Fred. I don't want to get schmaltzeroo here. Early 50s, I remember my sister used to play the upright piano. We had a little apartment, one bedroom. How many of us slept in the one bedroom? Mom and Dad were in one bed. I was in the bed. Sister was in the bed. Brother was in the crib. Grandmother was in the small, teeny little so-called living room. And they had a piano, and there was music in the house. It was civilization. I doubt very much that all immigrants are the same. I kind of doubt that all cultures are the same. I kind of doubt that all people will produce the America that we wish. That's kind of what I'm talking about. We know that. Nobody told us to speak anything but English in the house. Now, my grandmother didn't speak English. She didn't know it. But we were told never to speak a foreign language in that house. We were taught that you had to speak English. Now, compare that with the immigrants who come here and spit on our language, wave their flag at sporting events, and tell us that we owe them. Can you imagine this? What's the point of complaining?
Savage.
Now, let me go back for a moment, if I may, to the Savage Nation, because it's important that we begin at the beginning of my political trilogy. Yes, you know that I was right when I said I'm trying to save America from the liberal assault on our borders, on our language, and on our culture. Press one for English. Now, why should you have to press one for English? This language is our language. It's the glue that holds a nation together. Yet the immigration mobs have now tried to usurp not only our nationality and our national pride and national identity, but our language itself. And with the help of these spineless, quisling politicians who have pandered to the Hispanic mobs, we are losing America. And as I said to you, if you're tired of being attacked in school whenever you celebrate the achievements of America, if you're weary of being trampled on whenever you speak in favor of morality, if as a Boy Scout you become a pariah while the perverts have become the victims, Michael Savage is the right place to go. When it comes to our culture, we're being told by liberals to let the illegal invaders, as well as the legal newcomers, to redefine and reshape our culture into their image. That's how far it's gone. And that's why I said, wake up, America. Our borders, language, and culture are being threatened. And it's up to us as principled patriotic citizens to defend and protect the freedoms we cherish. I said, if the price of liberty is eternal vigilance,
Savage.
Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
He who fears the Lord understands that is the beginning of wisdom, because he who fears nobody, he who fears no man and no higher being is the most dangerous amongst us, as you well know. You know that I get in these moods every once in a while. So I flipped open the Bible and I read some Proverbs. Now, hold on. Don't turn the station off so fast. I was reading it during the break to the guys and they started to laugh. And they said to me, how come you're reading this all of a sudden, the Proverbs, Savage? I said, well, if you're a sinner like me reading the Bible, I know there's something amazingly good about it. Because if I were a saint, I wouldn't need the Bible. I wouldn't need the words of God. Because I'm not a saint, because I'm just a man and a sinner like all the rest of you. There's a special meaning of the Bible. It was written for us. It wasn't written for saintly people. It was written for all of us sinners. So I'm going to read you a few little passages. Tell me if any of these things offend you, if you're a member of the ACLU. Tell me if you good leftist haters are offended by any of these statements. Who loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots wasteth his substance. There is a generation that curse their father and do not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet are not washed from their filthiness. Oh, Madonna Mia. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their great teeth as knives. The poetry itself is beautiful. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, says Proverbs 18, four which I know not. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a young woman. I don't even understand that. It's so beautiful. So is the way of an adulterous woman, Proverbs 20. She eateth and wipeth her mouth, and saith, I have done no wickedness. And last night I watched Real Sex on HBO as I'm flipping around, and I just can't believe what I'm watching. I just can't believe what I'm watching. Now, I'm not saying I've never seen or heard about adultery or orgies. That's not the point. But when I see the mainstreaming of orgies on a cable network, and I see the deranged sluts of our time who put on these orgy parties, in my time, the vice police would have broken the door down and arrested them, all of them. And I see couples going there and, you know, whatever, and they talk about it. It's not so much that they do it. What gets to me is that they gloss it over as though it's healthy, that it's somehow therapeutic and good for their soul to be this degenerate. That's the part that gets to me. So in other words, orgiastic behavior is going on from the beginning of time. That's not the issue. The issue is that only in this time have they lavered it over with this lie, this big lie about how therapeutic it is, how holy it is. That's the part that gets to me. Yeah, I've seen the mainstreaming of pornography and vice. Are there any vice police left in America? Do they do anything? Is there anything considered vice anymore? I don't even know if they have vice cops anymore. Remember in the 50s, 60s, 70s, there were vice squads. You know, what was that? Gambling, drugs, pornography. Today, they're all run by the state. Today, gambling, drugs, and pornography are distributed by the state of California. Gambling in the form of Indian reservations, vice in the form of legalized prostitution in San Francisco, and pornography on the internet. It's unbelievable to me. You know, it really is. It's like Alice in Wonderland. I really feel like Rip Van Savage, that I've awakened in a strange new world. I don't know if it's a better world. I think it's a worse world, frankly. I think repression is the only thing that can save society. I think that only by repressing these vile images, these vile actions, and these vile urges, only by repressing them can the society survive. But, you know, many of people listening to the show don't even know there were vice police in America that didn't permit certain behaviors. They arrested people for various behaviors. What shocking primitivism. Can you imagine things like that? Houses of ill repute were illegal. Can you imagine houses of prostitution were broken into and unbelievable drug addicts were actually arrested in America at one time? Did you know that in San Francisco it was once illegal to sell drugs? Did you know that at one time it was illegal to sell pornography in San Francisco? Would you believe any of this? I mean, I'm trying to give you a history lesson here. Things change.
Savage.
You know, liberalism is a mental disorder. It is a mental disorder. It is not a political orientation. And it comes from, I can't even finish the sentence because you'll think that I'm making it up. It comes from a perverted worldview. When you violate your own mind, when you violate your own soul, let's start with that. Let's keep it ungraphic. I'll keep it very, very spiritual. When you engage in a lifestyle that is a perversion of decency, and that can go in any direction, when you violate your own soul on a regular basis, what happens is, see, the reason the Bible was clear on this is that it's not the acts themselves or by themselves which twist the mind. It's the conglomeration of both the acts and the people you're associated with that twist your mind and your soul. And you start to see everything wrong. William Blake wrote it best when he said, the eye that alters or the mind that alters, alters all. So when you see this worldview where America is always wrong, the military is always wrong, the police are always brutal, the white man is the oppressor, it comes from a twisted mind. And they project their own self-hatred onto America, the fatherland, the motherland, the homeland, whatever you want to call it. They see the nation as an authority figure that must be defied. And in order to defy that authority of the homeland, if you want to call it that today, our nation is what I call it, whatever you want to call it, it becomes a corporal body to them, like something real. And so they have to defy father or mother, which is the nation. And they've done it all their lives with their own parents. It's also an adolescent viewpoint or an immature viewpoint that's involved with this. They've never grown up. They're like children with beanies or with frisbees or whatever you want. I mean, and so they keep attacking America. They keep attacking the military. They keep attacking the police. They keep attacking white people, even though they're all white. They attack white people. So it's because of the distortion. It's a projection of their own self-hatred, is how I look at it. So, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm a man with an opinion that's based upon a great deal of thought. And don't think for a moment that because I say these things to you, I believe there should be no dissent or disagreement. I welcome it. When a nation no longer has any voices of dissent, it is no longer a nation I want to live in.
Savage.
The survival of America is in play right now. It seems to me that we have a very small window as Americans to voice our opposition to amnesty for illegal aliens, to defend marriage, to support the church, to support freedom of religion, and to support families. Other than that, there's almost no hope left. We will dissolve into a nothing nation. Let me give you another example. Maybe you're just not even hearing what I'm saying. People ask me why I support ritual in religion. For example, I'm not a religious person, but I support religion and ritual. Why? Because religion needs ritual. The rituals of the Catholic Church, for example, are very important. The rituals of Judaism are very important. The rituals of other religions are like the skin around an orange. The rituals hold that orange together. The skin holds the orange together. If you remove the rituals of religion, you remove the equivalent of the skin of the orange and the juice of the orange flows out. The same analogy can be made with a nation. If you remove the skin of a nation, which is the borders, you are going to dissolve as a nation. As a trained biologist, you know how many times I looked under a microscope, even as a young student, an undergraduate student, and I would see a organism invade a cell, and then you would see the cell wall of that organism ruptured. Think back to those clickety black and white movies when you were a kid in high school, and you'd see the fixed cell wall of a plant cell, remember? The thick cell wall of a plant cell. Or you would see the thin cell wall, the membrane, as it were, of a animal cell. Remember those lessons in high school? And remember what happened when those cell walls were punctured. The protoplasm would flow out of the cell. That is exactly what's going to happen to America if we let our borders be busted wide open. We will no longer be a nation that is identified as America. We'll become something like they're calling it Mexifornia, they're calling it Mexamerica, they're calling it, I don't know, many different names. You have to ask yourself if you really always wanted to live in Mexico. And if you did, why didn't you go there? Did you want something that Mexico offers that we don't? Would that be a corruptible police force? Would that be a military that can break your doors down and shoot you in the middle of the night? Would that be a system of judges that could be bought like a cheap prostitute on a street corner? Is that what you want for America? Because if that is what you want, then you go ahead with that liberal hogwash that it is humane and compassionate. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now let's take the calls on the Savage Nation. Matthew, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I'm a 38-year-old Hispanic man, U.S. Navy veteran. My family and I are all bilingual. My wife was born in Mexico. But there's no way that we agree of giving amnesty or any type of legal status to any illegal aliens. It just spits in the face of all people who have done it the right way and done their paperwork just like we did. And there's just no way that they should be jumped to the front of the line.
I have said this before, Matthew. I believe that the Hispanics in America, many of whom go back 100 or more years in California, are absolutely more opposed to illegal aliens and their amnesty than the average American is, because they understand what a meltdown this will cause, not only in the Latino or Hispanic communities, but throughout society in general. Thank you very much for calling this program, having the guts to stand up and be counted. It can't be easy to be a voice in the wilderness amongst your own people, I guarantee it.
Savage.
Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome. What's on your mind?
You know, you're the quintessential analyst, so I have a question I've wanted to ask you for years. Do you see any redeeming value in the liberals? I can't find one.
Yes. Now, this is going to surprise you. You ask, do I, Michael Savage, arch conservative, see any redeeming value in liberalism, correct?
That, I can't find one.
Yes. The answer is yes, I do. And you'd say, well, he's going to say something sarcastic now. No, I won't. Rational liberalism is a very important break upon the excesses that might arise in an all-too-powerful bureaucracy or government. The problem is liberalism today has detached itself from its original libertarian roots and has become somewhat totalitarian in that it wants government to impose restrictions on people, restrictions, for example, of what you can say, what you can read, what you can speak. And they should control, liberals should control what you read, what you say, and what you speak. So that's the problem with phony liberalism. True liberalism would curtail the tendency towards an overreaching government, but in a rational manner. They wouldn't, for example, override a conviction against a terrorist from Algeria found with dynamite or explosives and timers in his trunk, would they? That's not rational liberalism. That's insanity, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. So... yeah, I mean, an overriding IRS needs to be curtailed by somebody. An overriding any government agency needs to be controlled, or else it will take over your whole life. We don't want that. We don't want an overriding governmental power. What is government? It's people. People will abuse power if they're granted unlimited power. So we have to be very careful to not give any governmental agency unlimited power. On the other hand, there has to be a rationale in liberalism, and I don't see any rationale. There's no balance left in it. Thanks for the call.
Savage.
1-800-449-8255. WOR, New York City. Frank, you're on the Savage Nation.
How are you, Michael? I enjoy your show, and I am a patriot of my country, and I love my country. However, I regrettably do not share your optimism on how we will conquer and we will survive in this country, because what you were talking about in your opening show, you're paralleling the Spartans with the
Athenians, right? The Spartans versus the Greeks.
Even the Spartans versus the Persians. And unfortunately, I don't think we will survive this, because the Spartans, since 7 years old, were trained to be, tough as nails. And they were brought up and shown and trained pain, to ignore pain and to be as tough as they can be. Whereas
I hear you, but, you know, here's the thing to take courage in, Frank. I said at the beginning that the rotten, stinking media, the academic establishment, and so many other elements of America seem to exemplify the weaknesses, tell people to get in touch with their weak side, and to blow it out of proportion. The media keeps showing us the junkies and the perverts, etc., and they never show us the boys who are really tough. There are plenty of them out there, Frank. When I see footage coming out of Iraq, these boys are the greatest generation. They look just like the boys who fought and died in World War II. We still have American boys who are capable and more than willing to fight. They are tough as nails. They're not found, perhaps, you know, in your neighborhood or in my neighborhoods, Frank, because these boys, unfortunately, have been wimpified by their mothers in the school system, who have told them to get in touch with their inner woman and to let it all hang out. And if they feel weak, to tell us why they feel weak and break down and cry. But those other boys are always going to be there. They always have been there, Frank. They're all over America. They're just not in the big cities to any extent.
Yeah, you have a point there, but I don't know. I just see as...
Frank, you see, look, don't give up. Let me explain something. When I went aboard the U.S. aircraft carrier, USS Stennis, last year with my son, and I got to meet these kids, and I saw the 24-year-olds and the 25-year-olds flying F-18s, tell me how they differ from the men who flew in World War II or the men who flew in Vietnam. They're no different, Frank. We continuously produce heroes. The difference is they used to be glorified by the media. There were movies written about the high noon types. Now we're writing movies about the drag queens and about the junkies and about the turncoats and the AWOL people. But they're not the norm. They're the exception, these freaks and these cowards. The norm are the kids flying the jets, my friend. You just don't see them because the idiots who run the media have expunged them from the national consciousness. But, Frank, they're there. How do you think our ships are running at sea?
Well, Michael, listen, I hope that you are right. I pray that you are right. And I
wait, wait, let me add something to it, Frank. What makes you think the Iranians are so tough?
No, I don't think the Iranians are...
What makes you think that every Afghani or every Iraqi wants to go throw himself under a truck with a bomb on his chest? That's another myth that the media is putting out in order to scare everyone to death. They're putting out, in essence, propaganda movies against us. But, Frank, believe me, they have their own wimpification going on in Iran. Many of them would rather not fight as well. So don't assume that every one of the opposition are tough and we're all weak. You know, we have our own Spartans. Just look at the U.S. Marine Corps. The problem is we have a military that's turned on its own men by prosecuting those boys who act like the Spartans and turning them into the wimps. So the problem is very, very complicated, Frank. But it doesn't begin and end with the fear that that we're too wimpified. I don't believe it at all.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope that I'm wrong. I really do.
Frank, it's not that I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. Frank, what we're drawing our conclusions from is the media. The media controls what we think. The only people they show you in the military are guys who've had their legs blown off or their eyes shot out, or some fat cow that they showed the New York Times this weekend saying she was raped in the military. Everywhere you turn, there's an image of weakness and despair being promoted by the weak and the despairing who own and run the media. It's their psychosis being projected onto the public consciousness. But believe me, there's another America. There's a Spartan, tough America, Frank. It's just been put out of the public consciousness. That's because the garbage run the imagery.
Yeah. Well, you make a great and strong point, Mike.
Good. Go home and feel the reality of America. It's not seen in the pages of the Daily News, the New York Post, and the New York Times, Frank. You live in New York, but believe me, there's a whole world outside of what Murdoch puts out and what Sulzberger puts out. There's an entire other universe, Frank. Thanks for the call. It's right in New York. Look at the NYPD. Most of them are heroic. They've just been beaten to death in recent times by, again, the lawyers and the liberal media. We understand that. Now let's go on.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To the average political person, it's already some of the minds are already on where you're going, what you're doing, you know. It's a normal thing. Your mind doesn't want to think about Iraq. You don't want to think about illegal aliens. You don't want to think about Bush. You don't want to think about Hillary. You're sick of it all. I don't blame you. It's June. Think of what you would be doing if you were a kid. What would you be thinking if you were a kid? You'd be thinking about summer vacation. Well, you're still a kid inside. The inner kid wants a vacation. I know my inner kid wants one. And my inner kid's going to get one next week. I'm off next week. Pow Hana, goodbye. I don't know where I'm going yet. I've made no plans. I'm the only person on earth who has I'm taking a vacation. I don't know where I'm going. I'm not going to Paris. Why should I go to Paris? Because I'm on vacation. To me, sticking around the house for a few days and taking care of stuff that's been hanging, patching a wall and seeing, calling the painter and whatever. I mean, these are the things that actually ground me and make me feel good. Then I'll go somewhere. I'll go to L.A. I'll go on a boat for a few days somewhere. After the show last night, I ran to the boat, and I was so exhausted. I said, do I really want to spend the time untying it and taking the covers off and starting the engines in it? And the dog is with me, Teddy. And he's a little leery. He doesn't like the boat as much as he did when he was a baby. He gets a little freaked out on it. But it was hot and the bay was calm. And I said, how many nights do you think you have left in your life like this? I have to, you know, I have to motivate myself. I become my own father. In other words, when you were young, when you were a kid and you were lazy, either your mother or your father motivated you one way or the other, with reason sometimes, or cajoling, or threats, whatever worked. But now as an adult even, you have to motivate yourself. So I said, yeah, I said to myself, okay, fine. Now you say, are you crazy talking to yourself? I don't know. Do others do it? I'm afraid to find out others don't do that. If they don't, then I'm crazy. My mother used to say to me, God rest her soul, that it's okay if you talk to yourself. She said, it doesn't mean you're crazy. It's when you start answering yourself that you're crazy. I didn't even know how funny that was at the time. I don't answer myself out loud. You ever see those the nuts who walk around yelling at them at themselves? Whew. So I go out in the boat. I come back. The dog, the this, the that. I look at this dog's eyes. I'm sorry. Now I'm going to get maudlin. I look at his eyes. I see a being. I don't see a dog anymore. I'm losing it. In other words, I don't say dog. Me, man, you, dog. That, you know, dog. I don't know what to make of this anymore. I see a being. I see a being. That's all I see next to me, another kind of being. I see it in a bird, a bee, a dog. Now, maybe I've always felt this, because I know going back to childhood, I always saw the fragility of life, the preciousness of human life. And my whole life has been given over to, you know, therefore choose life. And now we're facing the struggle of our time, which is death worshippers who say, therefore choose death. This is the most galactic battle in the history of the world all over again, which is the death worshippers who are willing to kill their own children in the name of a mythical concept called their God, facing us, we who love life. Amazing. I don't even want to eat anything with eyes anymore. So last night I had rigatoni with meat sauce. You say, well, if you're not going to eat anything with eyes, how could you have meat sauce? Well, the chopped meat didn't have eyes. As I was pondering that, I said, nothing with eyes. I mean, rigatoni with meat sauce. The meat sauce, the little pieces of meat had no eyes in it. So you can't say I'm a hypocrite. I am not a vegetarian. I remember there's a famous story about an English philosopher, I forget who. He was in his club in the 1800s. And he said he was pondering becoming a vegetarian because it was popular at that time in certain society circles for moral reasons or ethical reasons to become a vegetarian. And he said, whereupon the waiter put down a large fish on the table for him and his table mates to eat. And as he was pondering becoming a vegetarian, the waiter sliced open the fish to serve it. And inside the belly of the fish was a smaller fish. And he said, if the fish can eat a fish, he said, then I can eat the big fish. And he said he gave up the foolishness of becoming a vegetarian. That's so. I don't know. I mean, I'm not giving you a definitive, you know, answer. I'm just saying how the mind works. I think as you get older, if you're sane, you again go back to having the sentiments that you had as a child. I'm not like Uncle Junior at that level, but the sensitivities start to reemerge in your being that were there inherently as a child. You know that? I swear to you, like the animal thing. I always saw like the glint. When I was a young undergraduate biology student, I'm sorry to bore you. I'm just rambling. I know you'd rather hear about Democrats bad, Republicans good. Cigars are wonderful for your lungs. Smoking is good. Eating grease is good for you. That's what you want to hear. Oil is very good to. What was I talking about? I'm drifting off here. I was talking about Babe Wolf. Where was I? I forgot what I was talking about. I don't know. No one's even the producer fell asleep in the chair. It's June. I think he wants a vacation.
Savage.
Sacramento, Tony, you're up on the Savage Nation. On which topic?
Hi, Dr. Savage. In your opening monologue, you made a really awesome observation, and it was that when we get a little older, we tend to, some of those realizations we had as a kid tend to re-manifest themselves, and I have been noticing that. It took me 5 years after retiring from the Navy to realize that, but you hit it, you know, dead on.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait. Tell me what's happened as you become more mature. What has happened in your viewpoint?
Well, as a kid, I remember as a little kid, we used to, for example, travel from Half Moon Bay to Tacoma, Washington, along the California and Oregon and Washington coast to visit my grandfolks. And I remember as a kid, everything just seemed so huge and wonderful and spectacular. My perspective was one of just so much grandeur. And as I got a little older, it just seemed that things started to become a little bit more mundane. And now that I spent 20 years in the Navy seeing things, you know, abroad and whatnot, and I come back to the States, and now that I've settled down, it seems that I'm starting to rediscover some of these wonderful things again, whether it be...
I know what you're saying. In other words, the awe that you saw as a child is recurring again in your consciousness.
Absolutely. I mean, anything as little as even a flower or just looking at my children, it's just beginning to rekindle.
Well, that's because you realize that life is very precious and finite, and each living thing is precious. That's why you went in the Navy, was to defend the preciousness of America. I can understand that. But I have the same exact feelings going on. I'm telling you, you know, I mean, I've always let flies out of a screen. I didn't want to, which doesn't mean that I wouldn't kill somebody to try to hurt me. If I could get a shot at them first, I would take it. I'll tell you right now. You know, if a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put one in his house first, his mother's house first. I learned that a long time ago. So don't get me wrong. I'm not going soft in any way. But on the other hand, my view of nature in particular is being restored, the one I had as a child. For example, when I flew down to L.A., when I flew over the land of California, it's unbelievable. When you actually stare out the window, even on a mundane flight from SFO or Oakland to Los Angeles, and you look at the coast and this amazing state that we live in, how vast and gorgeous it is, and you see the gullies and the ravines and the rivers and the little ranches and the farms, and you can literally see the history of the whole state when you fly over it, and the beaches and the ocean. And the 10 different zones, we have everything from the Arctic to the tropical here. You're knocked back with awe. And of course, I got to tell you this, Tony, there was loads of snow all over the High Sierra. Unfortunately for Al Gore, just as there's been loads of snow in every other May that I've ever lived here, the mountains were filled with snow. They haven't yet melted, despite the fact that his hysteria has seemed to have taken root so deeply in more impressionable minds, those that were, you know, addled by pot or Prozac. But, yeah, the preciousness of life, whether it be a flower or a bird or a bee, I understand that. Thank you, Tony. I don't want to get too maudlin, but you do change. Where it'll go, I don't know.
Yeah!
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Baron Guy de Rothschild has died at the age of 98. He was the heir to the House of Rothschild banking family. Died at 98. In addition to his financial acumen, onophobes. Can an onophobe be a xenophobe, or can only onophobes be a good xenophobe, or can onophobes never be a xenophobe, or can a xenophobe ever be an onophobe? He also had a family wine, Chateau Lafite Rothschild, and he also raised thoroughbred racehorses. So there's a rich man who did something with his life, as opposed to living on Pacific Heights and becoming a drug addict. 1-800-449-825. I mean, he built on the family fortune. He didn't just become a trust fund case. He did something with it, Rothschild. Oh, there's his picture. Baron Guy de Rothschild, leader of French arm of bank dynasty, dies at 98. I can't imagine what it must have been like to have been born into that, you know, to be born rich. I haven't any idea if it would be good or bad to be born rich. I certainly wasn't. Maybe my grandson will know it, and who knows if that's a blessing or a curse. I don't know. How do I know? Blah, blah, blah. He married Alex. Alex he married in 1937? I don't want to read this now. Please. I'm going to read you left apart. Oh, that's a woman's name in Europe. He married Alex Shea de Coromia. And she was his third cousin once removed. Why? What's wrong with that? No, but look what he did when you read it. When you read the whole story, how he survived and how he thrived. Chateau Lafite Rothschild, the horses. Besides banking, the family was known for its horses and vineyards. This is very interesting. I'll read it myself tonight. Don't let me on. Here's another obituary. Rudolf Arnheim, 102 years old, psychologist and scholar of art and ideas. He lived to 102? How could a psychologist live to that age? That's amazing. Rudolf Arnheim, a distinguished psychologist, philosopher, and critic, whose art died on Saturday at his home in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He was 102. Wow. You would think psychologists would die young because they have so much inner turmoil. Wouldn't you like stereotype thinking that a psychologist would die like 57? And look what he lived through. I mean, here's a guy who lived through. He was Jewish. Nazis come to power. He flees to Rome in 1933 from Germany, right? He's at the University of Berlin. So, you know, when you hear this crap that stress kills, it's such nonsense. Stress is life, my friend. The greatest stress is trying to avoid stress, in my opinion. So he flees Germany, goes to Rome. Now, he's 102 when he dies. You hear this? In the late 30s, after Mussolini allies himself with Hitler, Arnheim flees to England, where he becomes a translator for the BBC. 1940, he arrives in New York. Teaches at the New School for Social Research. Worked at Columbia. I mean, this is a heavy-duty left-winger. I understand that. He's entitled to it. In those days, being a left-winger was different than today. Professor Arnheim joins Sarah Lawrence in 43. You hear this? In the mid-70s, after retiring from Harvard, he's associated with the University of Michigan. Well, this guy outlived all his wives. His second wife, Mary Frame, who married in 1953, dies in 1999. Blah, blah, blah. What a story. So he lives to 102. I wonder what his secret is. What is the secret of this guy? He flees the Nazis, goes through all this. I wonder what he ate. I should find out if it was something to do with his food. Then you find out that he ate corned beef sandwiches and he smoked Chesterfield, but not heavily, only a carton a day. I used to do that when I was always like into like longevity and ask, you know, someone who had like a relative who was like 97, what their secret was. You'd hope you'd hear that they ate pickled herring and tomatoes and they only drank spring water and they never smoked and they did yoga. Usually the reverse was true, the very old. I found that, in other words, you can get longevity up to a certain point, but the very old is nothing, makes no sense. It's almost purely genetic in the very old. That doesn't mean you shouldn't practice healthful practices. You'd be dead if you didn't, because the rest of us don't have their genetic inheritance. See, we don't have the genetic inheritance of the guys who live to 100, most of us. So we have to watch our step, or we'll die younger than we should. And wouldn't you want to live longer and see the Islamo-fascist bomb a city or something? Just think what you're missing. Just think how wonderful it'll be great to live another 30 years if you're a guy 50. How wonderful the world what you're going to see. Just look ahead. Look what you got to look forward to with George Bush. And after he's gone from office, wow, you got Hillary Clinton. Would you want to miss that? You don't want to miss that. Would you want to miss the Islamization of England? No, you don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss the great things coming in the world that we live in.
Savage.
So I had a dream. It was a weird dream. And I'll make it simple. Many of you don't care about my affairs. Some of you do. Here it is. It was like a prophetic dream for me. And I'm sharing it with you because I want to know what you think of it. I'm standing with an Iraqi man. He was clearly an Iraqi man. There were four children, and they were little children. They were under 5 years old, and they were all trying to throw stones at me. They did not know who I was, but I was not of them. I was not Iraqi. I was different. I was not one of them. I was an outsider. The children had large brown stones, and they were sort of waddling over with these large stones, trying to throw them at my feet. They were big stones. They were brown stones. The children could hardly lift them up. And these little children had no eyes. Their eyes looked ghoulish. They looked like they had no soul. They were blindly hating the outsider. They were the golem. They were the golem. They were the soulless. They hated the non-Iraqi, the non-Muslim. And they were walking and stumbling, trying to drop these rocks at my feet. Suddenly, one of the four boys put the rock down. The Iraqi father and I looked at each other, and we got on the ground, and we almost started to cry. We started to pray to God, he in his way, and me in my way. We realized that there was one child amongst them who could break free of the chain of hatred. In essence, he was the Messiah of the Iraqi people, perhaps the Messiah of the Muslim people. I was almost to cry with joy that finally one of them was not hateful and murderous. The Muslim father, who was a good man, was crying with joy. He saw hope for his people, that hatred could be, perhaps they could be let out of hatred by their own Messiah. And then this child who dropped the rock and didn't want to hit me with it started to drool and drool and drool. And I couldn't stand the drooling. And I got up and I said, I can't wait for this. I can't take this. I don't like drool. I can't wait for the child to grow up and stop drooling. And I got up and the dream ended. I'll let you interpret the savage dream of the drooling child, because I know what it means. And it's pretty clear to me what it means. that, A, we don't have time to wait for the Messiah to arise amongst the Muslim people. Somebody better arise real fast, or there's going to be a blowout between the Christians and the Muslims, and I can tell you right now who loses.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I want to talk about something trivial. Went to a shopping mall today for lunch. I had my power lunch alone in a little restaurant. I prefer eating alone. But to make a long story short, as I'm walking down the mall, I see an ambulance, two police cars, and a fire truck at the end of the mall near a popular Italian restaurant. So naturally, I'm curious like everyone else. I go over. I see the fire truck, the ambulance, the police cars. I figured either someone had a heart attack in the restaurant or there had been an altercation. So I look and look and look, and I see a thin black woman, African probably, not African-American, but African, sitting there. And one of the EMS techs is on his knees talking to her. He's on his knees now. He's almost begging her. It's almost a posture of begging the woman. And he's filling out form after form. The police are filling out forms. The firemen are filling out forms. So I said, something doesn't add up here. I don't know what's going on. So across the street, I see a security guard. So I start to ask him what went on. So he smiles. He says, I don't really know. He was a black guy. And we talked. I said, one thing or another. He says, I don't know. He says, it looks crazy to me, too. So I said, where are you from? He said, Fiji. So I spoke to him in a little Fijian. I told him I'd been in villages going back in 1960s and this and that. And he said, oh, you were in the bush. I said, yeah, I collected plants. And I asked him what island he was from. And he told me Benga, the fire-walking island. And I said, I've been there. And he was very surprised. He was a young fellow, but he was also obviously new to the country. But he was smiling and he was very intelligent about America. He said to me, oh, he says, this is what goes on in Marin County. Now, Marin County is Barbara Boxer's backyard. It's where things idiotic and liberal occur on a regular basis. I said to him, do you realize how much this is costing to bring in this ambulance, these police cars, these fire trucks? I said, what happened to the woman? He said, let me find out. So he went over and he quietly spoke with her and he came away smiling and he said to me, she said she didn't feel well, so she called 911. I said, what? I said, it must have cost $200,000 in equipment and manpower because this person didn't feel well. So he starts to laugh. He says, that's Marin County. It goes on all the time. I said, but that's why we're going broke. These people know how to abuse our country. They don't feel well and they call 911 and they get a nice fireman on his hands and knees asking her how she feels for fear of being sued by some rat bum from NYU, some scummy lawyer who should have been aborted as a child, because that's why the country's breaking down. It's the psychopathic communist lawyers who have twisted the police and the firemen and the entire society around their fingers. Everyone reacts for fear of a lawsuit. So we walked down the mall together, and he just said, I'm not surprised. He said, this kind of insanity goes on from the north of the county to the south. He said, it's Barbara Box's backyard. And I said, Nisambula and blah, 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 and Samothe, which means peace in Fijian, and we bid our goodbye. So there it is. There's your United States of America, a nation filled with morons on their hands and knees to legal and illegal. It doesn't matter. The cops, the firemen, the police, everybody on their hands and knees to the illegal alien, asking them how they feel. What can they possibly do for them?
Savage.
This country is facing such serious problems. The change of demographics, the sweep of history sweeping over America. Illegals running over us like the barbarians overran Rome. I'm telling you like it is. I mean, people who know history agree with me. I really don't give a damn about the liberals or the socialists who want to shut me up and tell me not to say these things. And not one politician in the United States of America running for the presidency, the man who will rule the most powerful nation on earth, will talk about the topic. What does that tell you about the state of America today? That all you've got are a bunch of people up there talking about entitlements for the sick and the meek, that we're going to give you more medication, we're going to give you more medical apparatuses, we're going to take better care of you if you're ill. Is that what America needs right now, is to focus on medical care? How about focusing on border security? How about focusing on language security? How about focusing on cultural security? That would be my platform if I ran for the presidency. And don't get me wrong, I'm never going to run for office. I will not run for office. That's not my point. Why do we never hear this out of a politician's mouth anymore? Why has the word nationalism become a dirty word? Why has the word sovereignty become a pornographic word? Why has the discussion of border policy become a hush-hush? Why is calling for English only something dirty? Why is referencing our cultural foundations, the Bill of Rights, the U.S. Constitution, the Magna Carta, if you want to go back to England, why are we supposed to hide those documents? Why can't we talk about the greatest document ever written, which is the Bible? The Bible of the Jewish people and of the Christian people. Must we also be ashamed of that? Pornography is allowed to be shown. Pornography is shown everywhere, every night, on every television screen in America, but the Bible is hidden. We have gone from the Gideons to HBO, all in one generation. Can you understand what I'm saying to you? Why do you think the Gideons placed the Bible in hotel rooms for so many years? Because they knew that when a person was traveling alone, they would be tempted by the devil. They knew that that person would be tempted to use drugs or to use excessive amounts of alcohol or to do something with a prostitute in that hotel room. They understood that. And so they felt that the Word of God placed in the hotel rooms might be the little deciding factor, the still small voice in the still small book that might keep people from wandering from where they really wanted to be, their decent natures. And what do you have now? Have you clicked on those pay-per-view channels? The Weimar Republic was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs compared to the vile filth being pumped into your hotel rooms and into your bedrooms. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure you've watched it. I've watched it too. Until you want to puke from watching it. Until you want to vomit from watching it. It's all filled with the harlots of the golem. It's the golem of the earth. The lowest of the low. And what can I say to you? We've gone from this in one generation. We have gone from St. Christopher medals to dream catchers in one generation. In one generation, we went from women like Rosie the Riveter until we now have the nauseating view of Rosie O'Dumbbell in one generation. Women who riveted ships together to women who try to unrivet the ship of state, all in one generation. And the question is, what can we do about it? The answer is, talk about it. Walk about it, talk the talk, walk the walk, read the books, listen to the shows. But you've got to talk out, you've got to speak out, you've got to go to the rallies, you've got to speak to these fraudulent politicians and tell them to shut up and stop talking about medical care. Say, I don't give a damn about medical care. Talk about the health of the nation. Talk about the borders. Talk about English only. Talk about our culture. Stop talking about rubbish. That's what you've got to do. That's the only solution. It's the only salvation. We have to cause the revolution from inside the nation. We've got to lead the politicians because they are incapable of leading us.
Savage.
I don't know where you're going to turn when and if something terrible happens. Are you going to wake up and say George Bush caused all of this? Is that the liberal response? If, God forbid, something horrible happens in this country, something worse than 9/11, you're going to blame the Republicans, Bush, heterosexuals, white people, Christianity, Jews, who are you going to blame? Well, you'll blame anybody but yourself. The American left doesn't even understand that it is the reason. It is the chief reason that Islam is at war with the West. And what's really amazing to me is that the people who have the most at stake in the battle against Islamism and the most to lose if Islamism wins, you, the progressives, so-called, you're the least able to fight it, the least willing to fight it. You're the ones who hate the Pentagon. You're the ones who hate the White House. You're the ones who hate the state capitol, the national capitol. You're the ones who hate Israel. And yet the F-16s that fly overhead are there to protect you from the Islamists who would cut your throat and throw you down a well. The very values of the West. 40 years of civil rights, gay rights, feminism, reproductive choice, that's abortion, sexual madness called freedom, the right not to worship if you don't want to worship. In other words, the Marxist left's wild dream is protected by the very elements that you hate in this country. You, the sexually unorthodox, you, the bohemian, you, the poet, you, the professor, you are protected by those F-16s. You're protected by the boys who go to church and went to church every Sunday. You are protected by the rock rib conservatives in this country who fly over your head, who are dying in Iraq for your sins. Civil rights, gay rights, privacy rights, abortion, sexual madness, the right to worship or not to worship, all protected by the boys from somewhere else who you spit at, who you sneer at, who you mock. They're the reason you're alive. And the reason they're dying is because of your sins. The verminous left, the Larry Flint left, as now adopted by the Democrat Party itself, the Larry Flint left is now the official party platform of the Democrat Party. I'm not fooling you. Everything that Larry Flint and his ilk stood for in the 60s and 70s has been adopted, if not overtly, then covertly, by the Democrat Party. They have accepted this debased, destroyed West, social West. They would not only have accepted it as the norm, they welcome it. It's the Marxist dream, the death of the family, the death of heterosexuality. Everything that the left dreamed of has come to pass in this country. Hit hardest the black people. 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. The American left celebrate this. Celebrate this as a sign of liberation, that they have been liberated from the binds of bourgeois marriage. The Muslims saying, hell no, we won't go. You're not going to pollute our children. You're not going to turn our children into Jezebels. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores and our sons into homosexuals. We're not going to let you do it. We'll kill you before you do it. You're not turning our sons into little homosexuals. You're not going to brainwash our children. We will send them to Muslim schools. You're not going to turn our daughters into whores. We'll send them to Muslim schools. We're not going to let our daughters dress like Britney Spears. We're not going to let them behave like Paris Hilton. We don't like them. We think they're vermin. We think they're garbage. We don't care that they're held up as role models. We detest them. We hate them. We think that they're the most disgusting human beings on the planet. We'll not send our children. We won't even go to the movies. We won't turn on the television set. Incidentally, the Orthodox Jews have the very same view. So the American left, which is able to get away with these behaviors and sell these behaviors, is protected by the very, let us say, Christian right that they detest and sneer at in their F-16s, in their tanks, and behind their machine guns, if you wanted to put it in that crude sense. And, of course, they continue to not recognize that they have brought about Islam's rage. No, it's not Israel, per se, that the Muslims really care about. It's not territory. It's not land. That's what the left will tell you, that the Jews stole the land of the Muslims. That's the simple, archaic notion of the American left. It's that Israel's left-wing social premise and left-wing social freedoms that threaten Islam in the Middle East. They don't want it spreading. They don't want a homosexual parade down the streets of Damascus. They don't want a gay rights parade in Tehran. They don't want boys tongue-kissing each other in their nation's capitals. They'd rather die than let that happen. So they say death to Israel. They don't really know what Israel is. Israel's an idea. It's not that their grandfather's olive grove was taken. It's that their grandfather's purity was stolen by the infection of the West's social mores. And they don't want them in their villages. They don't want them in their homes. They don't want them on Al Jazeera. And they're not going to let you do it to them. No matter what the madmen who run these media empires may think, Islam will never tolerate the sewer pipe that comes out of New York City and the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood's sewer factories will never penetrate the Muslim world, nor should they. But that's what's provoking Muslim rage. It's not so much what the Pope said. It's what Larry Flint did by hijacking the Supreme Court, in my opinion. And every other left-wing civil libertarian lawyer in America who every day goes about his business of destroying the Christian mores, the Judeo-Christian mores of this country with glee. What fun they're having, the boys from NYU. The bright boys from Columbia and NYU and Harvard Law and Bolt Law School, all of the lowest places on earth where they teach you how to defeat the other man without firing a shot, without cutting his throat. You can actually cut his throat. The lawyer learns to commit jihad without firing a shot. And he learns it at NYU, Columbia Law, Harvard Law. How to commit jihad without firing a shot. How to decapitate the enemy without picking up a rusty knife. Who was it who said that give him a fountain pen instead of a gun and he can steal more money? Well, those were the old days. Just give him a judge that he owns. Not all judges, of course, can be owned. Some of them are very reputable and great men. In fact, they're greater today, the honest ones, than they ever were, given the climate of the times and the lack of money that they actually, the poor amount of money that they make. My hat's off to the honest judges. And I've met a few in my life. They are the true heroes. They're like the social workers of the legal profession, the far and few between.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the, oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it for her, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Transgenders, it's Friday. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's Wharf. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this. This mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. Like IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You can push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships from World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pompanito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them blowtorch open the hatches to get him in and out. Every time I encounter anything outside the house, it's a problem. Who serves a man a bowl of clam chowder soup that is made primarily of cornstarch and the essence of a clam and charges them $6.95. They're lucky that I didn't say anything to them. I went there like invisible to see what it would be like if I were a tourist. But they don't know what they're eating. They're drunk, most of them. You put a glass of wine in them, a cheap glass of rot gut wine. They get giddy. What do they know what they are? They come from Peoria, right? They put a glass of cheap wine already.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
This is a great story since I'm a dog lover, and I once had a border collie, which was an amazing dog, Bandit. I don't want to tell you what happened to it because I don't know. I remember I moved to Long Island, and he had been a California dog who used to run freely over the valleys. He'd escape every yard Bandit was ever in. The kids loved him. This dog was so wonderful, Bandit. And no matter what we put him in, he could jump the gate. And he always used to run across the valley and meet up with a girl dog. He was so smart, he would free her from her backyard. I don't know how he did it. And they'd go running around, I swear to God, in the valleys together. So he grew up like that. Then I had to move back to New York for a couple of years, and I lived on Long Island. That's not to be confused with Long Island. I lived on Long Island. And there are long guys there. And the dog was chained in the front of the house, and I had to go off to work. I came home, there was a chain and no dog. And my worst fear is probably that some animals took the Bandit and used it in some terrible torture. That's the worst thing. That I don't even want to think about it. But this dog was smart and tough. He once fought a Rottweiler in the neighborhood and scared the Rottweiler. The Rottweiler didn't run away, but the Rottweiler backed down. I don't know how he did it. He did. So the dogs are geniuses. They're apparently the collies are the smartest of the breeds, or poodles. I don't know. But there's a new study out of Germany. It has found that a border collie named Rico now understands more than 200 words and can learn new ones as quickly as many children. And so they say that's good news for those of us who talk to our dogs. Now, if this dog has a vocabulary of 200 words, that means he has a larger vocabulary than Tony Soprano and all of the rap artists in America put together. They seem to be stuck on one letter, words that begin with an F. I don't know why, but they make a lot of money at it. But Rico understands more than 200 words. And that's interesting. So the researchers have proven that people who talk to their dogs are cutting-edge communicators, not just a bunch of eccentrics. Now, the researchers found that Rico knows the names of dozens of play toys and can find the one called for by his owner. And this dog has a vocabulary size about the same as apes, dolphins, and parrots trained to understand words. But as I say, his vocabulary at 200 words is definitely larger than those of all of the Goombas on The Sopranos when you add it up. But it's a very popular show, and people make millions of dollars an episode for speaking as few words as possible. So it just shows you that the more words you know doesn't mean that you make more money. In fact, in America today, the less words you know, you make more money. In fact, those who know fewer words make more money. That goes for politicians who speak in sound bites, and that goes for actors who speak in approximately 50 to 60 words maximum. And that, of course, goes for rap artists who have a vocabulary of about 40 words and The Sopranos who have a vocabulary of about 73 words. So the old adage of, you know, literacy may be gone with the wind. Maybe it's an endangered thing to do is teach your children a lot of words. Maybe you shouldn't teach your children a lot of words. Have them watch Howard Stern's show and to abuse the mentally ill. They'll get very far in the world that they're growing up in. The researchers put several known toys in a room, along with one that Rico the dog had not seen before. From a different room, Rico the dog's owner asked him to fetch a toy, using a name for the toy the dog had never heard. The border collie was able to go into the room with the toys and 7 times out of 10 bring back the one he had not seen before. The dog seemingly understood that because he knew the names of all the other toys. He figured the new one must be the one with the unfamiliar name. So it just shows you, 200 words now, and that means that if you're talking to your dog, you really do have man's best friend. Man's best friend.
Savage.
Are the shameless shopaholics really happy? An article from England. stupid women who shop from day to night, believing that devoting every spare hour to shopping will make them happy. Idiots. Are the shameless shopaholics really happy? Yeah, that's the consumer culture. I was never into that. I try to buy something this week. I don't know what's wrong with me. I have trouble buying things. I wear the same clothing for years. I'm comfortable in it. I know it doesn't look as good. So I went out. I forced myself to buy four pair of pants the other day. And I came home, I looked at them, and I proceeded to hang them up and put them in the back of the closet. I'm saving them for an important day. I don't know what that day may be, but I'm saving them. Then I buy a new pair of sneakers. That took an hour. I almost died till he found the right size. This size, take that size, and the width, a D, an E, a double. I didn't have the old ones. Finally, I bought a pair. I said, oh, fine. Just give them to me, please. You're very nice. Put them in a bag. Then I got a yen to buy a pair of shoes like an idiot. I bought something that looked good. They look like a... like an elf shoe. I went back to like the 60s. There was like an elf shoe. Like, I knew better. Oh, that looks good. I'll wear them around the house. I was crippled from them. If I put them on for 5 minutes, I couldn't walk. So I had to return them. I had to have them returned today. And it was a strange thing. Did I tell you what the dog did while the guy was trying to shoe on my foot? The first time I put my foot down on that little stand they have for the shoe, Teddy was with me. It was a Nordstrom's. He didn't do anything. Then the next time the guy said, try the other foot on it. I put the other foot down. Teddy jumped between the foot and the guy's hands. So I try to think, what in the world does a dog perceive? What was he perceiving? So I thought maybe, trying to project my Darwinian mind to the dog, he probably thought the guy was taking my foot by putting it into it with an instrument. What does he know? There's a stranger with a thing in his hand taking his master's foot into an object called a shoe and then like sealing it up with a lace. So he figured that was no good. It was dangerous. Then there was a miserable woman there, a middle-aged hag with two dogs that gives dog owners a bad name in department stores. You know, it's a privilege to let you bring a dog in a department store, and I'm really glad they do because guys like me are good owners. This piece of garbage, she was from New York living in Marin. I knew the type. I saw right away where she was. She was Gertz all the way. I don't care where she lived. She could live in the best community. This woman was Gertz. It was Gertz, Gertz, Gertz. She had Gertz on her soul. So she has two rat dogs with her, one like a Maltese yapper. My dog doesn't bark. They start barking at my dog. Now, here's what starts. I'm getting my shoes on, and Teddy's minding his business. And she looks over from like 25 yards away. I don't know where. They have eagle eyes, these Gertz women, the shopaholics. And she looks over, and she says something like out loud, like she knows me. What kind of dog is that? So I'm like, what kind of dog is that? So I said, take a guess. She wants to play Brooklyn with me. I can answer in Brooklyn. What kind of dog is that? Like, she's familiar already. I said, why don't you take a guess? So she says, a poodle? So I say, nothing. The best answer to that type is, the middle verb. Nothing. All right, so she don't say anything, but I see she's seething already that no one answered, that I didn't answer her. Maybe she's trying to pick me up. What do I know? I'm not interested, lady. You know? A few minutes later, she walks by, and right away, the dogs start barking, her dogs. You know what she has the nerve to say out loud? Oh, honey, you don't like that dog, do you? Meaning her dog didn't like my dog. Now, I could have gotten mad, but I control myself. And I say, this is why I don't buy anything. It's why I don't go out of the house. It's why I become a recluse and do takeout. I can't take it. People are mean everywhere, wherever you go. I mean, the clerks are nice in these stores. They're very nice guys. I don't know how they put up with people. I can't imagine what they must have to do at night to get over what they have to put up with. Well, oh, I don't even want to think about it. To make up for what they have to go through with being nice to people in these stores. I don't know how they get people to do it anymore. Then I always get sad in that department store because they have a piano player. It breaks my heart to hear it. I see a grown man sitting at a piano in the middle of the day, and I have the kind of kaleidoscopic mind. I know that this kid, it was like, let's say he was a C-talent musician. But he's like 45, good-looking guy in a tuxedo, playing in a department store. So all I don't see that. I see sadness coming my way. Why? I see all the way back to the first grade, kindergarten, preschool. Oh, look at that. Billy's talented. Let's take lessons. And the mother and father kill themselves. They pay for the lessons. And they encourage him to go to the high school of performing farts and blah, blah, blah. And the kid becomes an artiste and he struggles his whole life. And he's living on next to nothing. And here he is, 45, playing a piano in a department store. I'm not putting the guy down, but I hear the music and I get depressed. I don't want to hear the music there. I don't want to hear a piano in a department store because I don't just see the guy. I see like a whole tragedy there. Well, what are you going to do? I guess they pay him something. I have no idea. So I'm not a shopaholic, is what I'm saying.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I read that men growl and whine like dogs to determine dominance. There's a new story out of Science. It says a male dog will whine and beg in deference to a stronger dog, but will lower its voice into a guttural growl if it thinks it has a fighting chance. But here's the funny part. Men unconsciously do a similar thing. A new study finds that the lower the pitch of a man's voice, the more physically dominant other men think he is. You see why I'm a success in radio? I mean, there's a guy opposite me on my old station in New York who has the voice of a woman who's been put into a wearing blender. How could he pretend to be a conservative when he talks like that, when he gets excited? Yeah, hello, guy, how are you? Let's go get him. Kilmore over there. Yeah, go on. Yay, Bush, my commander-in-chief. Why would anyone listen to him? Men lower their voice when addressing a man they believe to be less dominant than themselves, but raise it when speaking to someone they think is more. I know a guy, a friend of mine who's a bachelor. Let's put it to you that way. A friend of mine who's a bachelor and very good looking and has his choice of women, has a dog he loves. Now, normally the dog sleeps in the bed with him. So this friend of mine had a girl over not too long ago, and they were in bed together with a strange girl. The dog gave the white eye and the growl at the girl. You know, because he got to think it was his spot in the bed. He didn't like that the girl was in the bed. He didn't know about he knew about dominance. So a male dog growled at the girl, gave the white eye and the mad eye that no one's, you're afraid of. They go from coochie, poochie, hoochie. All of a sudden, when they give you the white eye, no matter how small they are, they can rip your hands out. The girl laughed as she was smarter than everybody. The findings detailed in the July issue of the journal Evolution and Human Behavior could explain why vocal pitch in men and women are so different. Ever see women who talk like guys? Hey, all right. Hey, guys, how are you today? Vocal pitch determined by the main frequencies in the voice, about half as high in men as women. One reason women prefer men who speak in low voices is that vocal pitch is partly related to physical size. Taller men tend to have lower voices because they have longer vocal. That's nonsense. I'm not particularly tall. I have a great voice. I was blessed. There's tall guys with little skinny voices. And I know very tough guys that if you heard them on the phone, you'd think that they're wimps. So you can't really tell what a man is by the voice. This is another example of, you know, guys with pencil heads here. Who wrote this? Which Schmendrick got an with social dominance has to do with things like intelligence and social skills. Oh, that's clever. Which aren't necessarily related to body size or testosterone. Putz explained, I swear to God. I know. Dr. Putz wrote this? Wait a minute. I swear to God. Yeah, David Putz of the University of Pittsburgh, PUTS. This really is a parody of itself. Dr. Putz added, ancestrally, if pitch was related to dominance, it was first related to physical dominance before anything else, said Putz. Here's a guy who's been pushed around all his life, I can guarantee you. Experiments in which wimpy female wasps. What? Were painted to mimic dominant wasps. Well, who would be a wimpy female wasp on the political stage? Who's a wimpy female wasp who was painted to mimic a dominant wasp? Let's say Hillary Clinton's a dominant wasp. So who would be a wimpy female wasp painted to mimic a dominant wasp? Showed similar results. Phonies got harassed more often and for longer periods when they got into fights. Putz and his team. Putz and his team think lower vocal pitch signals. I don't know what he's talking about, Putz. He's looking for a grant. He's not such a putz if he's looking for a grant based on this. He'll probably get a big grant, Putz will. You know, when you write up a proposal like this, and a study is complicated as this, you know, Putz can get a nice big grant from the National Science Foundation. In the new study, 111 male university students took part in what they thought was a competition against another guy for a date with an attractive female student. The participants were asked to rate social and physical dominance of themselves and a competitor. I could never believe this. All the male participants, I can't even read it anymore. I got a double migraine from it. That's all. I'm leaving it.
Savage.
Let me just tell a 30-second dog story because it's amazing. I said, what could I tell the people that they'd enjoy about the dog? Well, it's just that. I come home. It's the same every night. He gets so crazy. And, you know, dogs are beautiful. I've always had dogs who get excited when they're young. But this one is different. He runs. And you ever see a rabbit run down a pasture? How every number of steps he leaps like with a hop? That's what Teddy does. He has a hop in him. I don't know where the hop came from. He's more rabbit than dog in a way. He runs and then throws himself up with a little hop and tugs at my clothing like in a comic book. And in the beginning, I'd say, Teddy, stop. You're going to rip my clothing. You know what I've come to? I say, Teddy, go ahead, rip my clothing. I don't even care. I let my arms hang down. He can rip my pants. He can rip my... Yeah, he doesn't mean to rip it. He's just trying to say hello. And he keeps going and going and going till he starts to wheeze. I have to stop him, and I have to grab him. I'm afraid the dog's going to, like, stroke out from excitement. But you know what? Why I don't stop him anymore? I'll tell you why. Because I know one day, unless I die from global warming or from a terrorism attack, one day he'll be old, and one day he won't be able to run, and he won't be motivated to run anymore, like my other dog, Snowy. She could hardly move. They become old like we do. They get arthritis, and they become, oh, you're home again? I had a rotten day. Don't even bother me. Look, I'm in the room. That's what they become later on. So I said, if this is what he is now, then enjoy it. Enjoy his joy, because in what, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever it may be, assuming that the earth doesn't melt down because of Al Gore's hot air, the dog won't be able to do it. And what? I'll look back and say, my God, I remember when you were little, Teddy, and you used to run in the driveway until you almost got a stroke and jump and nip at me. Yeah. So you see, you're lucky if you can look forward and see the future, because sometimes it can help you enjoy the present more. And it's the same with the past. If you can look back on the past, it can help you enjoy the present more. People say that you should live here now, be here now. You know, that phrase, be here now, sort of like a hippie thing. Well, they're 100% right, but the best way to be here now is to remember the past and think of the future.
Savage.
I think my dog has an itching attack from watching Will Blitzer, because he wants to see the man arrested for sedition and deported. Every time he sees one of these talk show guys on CNN, my dog starts to scratch. Every time he sees Neil Cavuto on Fox, the dog starts to like almost rip his ears out. He can't take it anymore. Teddy understands reality. I have to turn the news off in front of a two-year-old dog. That's what I think is going on. He sees the leprechaun, and the dog starts to howl.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You want to live in an old age home when you get older? I don't know about that. That's like an old... Just like an old thing to do. It's like old. It's like retro to go to a nursing home, a facility. Because your relatives don't want to deal with you. Like you're smelly and you can't take care of yourself. And everyone's fanatic now. Like their hair has to be perfect. Their teeth have to be flossed. Nobody wants anything imperfect around them. Like if a child's born with the wrong eye color, they're ready to let it go on the highway. I can't imagine what's going to happen to the old people in my lifetime. I just can't imagine it with the freaks that are running the show now. And their tendencies towards euthanasia, the Democrats, my God. I mean, the only people who would stop that would be the Christian conservatives. But they're sort of like out of favor now, you know. So now we have the secular humanists who have no respect for human life, no belief in sovereignty of a nation, no belief in patriotism. What do they believe in? I haven't any idea what they believe in. The pleasure principle? It's a nation of ids? That's an old word. Remember id and ego and superego from college years ago? It all went out the window. But we're a nation of id-driven people. Ids, ids, ids. That's all. So I don't know if I want to talk about it. Food stinks in our old age homes anyway. That's another thing. That needs a real revision. Whoever comes up with an old age home with like a gourmet kitchen, wow. Imagine that with like a chef from Austria. He can make you like schnitzel and applesauce. Why don't they serve them drinks like alcohol, have a bar for the oldsters? Why must everything be like a prison camp in this country? Like, you're old, now you have to eat, like terrible food and die miserably. Put a bar in the nursing home. There's got to be some people who would like a drink now and again, just to hang out. Little alcohol's good for you. Give them whatever they want at that age. They're like, wild in those places. It's like, I told you, I don't want to get into it. It's a family show, but I've heard a lot of these stories. It's unbelievable. Houston, Texas. AJ, what's on your mind? Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Savage, good old down home cooking. Savage, if I had to depend on my children,
I'd rather just go on and die first. Our American society have turned our children into weak puppets.
Weak puppets. All they want is pleasure.
And me being in a nursing home ain't going to work. I hope the good Lord take me fast.
You know, AJ, I haven't heard a man say that since my father died 30 years ago. He used to talk like that. He never wanted to be weak and being taken care of.
I don't want nobody wiping my neck. I don't want, and you know what I mean, I don't want nobody doing nothing. I just want to get out, because I depend on these children. I'm telling you, we in trouble. And I'm telling you what, if you really want to win this dang on war, I'm telling you, we got to get these bums out of there, the Democrats, the bums out of the Republicans, and the people, we going to have to take this damn country, this doggone country back. I'm sorry, sir. And I'm just sick and tired.
No, I know you worked up, because you could see they're all lying to us. They're lying through their teeth with Nancy Pelosi telling us she's going to have the most ethical Congress in history. I heard all of this before. You know it's BS.
Total BS, and they can take care of these problems, but they keep pussycatting around with these people. These people are going to put some on our butts, and if we don't stop as the people being naive, and speaking of naive, I'm going to tell you why the Dems won, because the black folks, they went for the dang nothing. They didn't even vote. I seen a deal on the TV the weekend. They did a Hispanic deal, but where was the black man? Jesse Jackson's them, where were they at? Them guys.
I don't know. Well, I think that it was the same thing again, all Democrat, you know.
Come on, man. When is the black folk going to ever wake up and get their head out the sand like ostriches? They being left behind. And it ain't because ain't nothing out there for them. It's out there, man. I go to these schools and see these children with their pants off their butts.
Can you believe it? Can you believe these kids with the pants hanging down under their behinds? Can you believe that this country would let that happen? I wouldn't permit that in a school. I go in a store. I mean, white and black kids. You see them with the pants hanging down with no belt, size 90 pants. Where is the man to say you're not coming into school wearing idiot outfits, a jail outfit like that? Go home and dress like a man and don't come to school.
I catch my son with them pants off his butt. I'm embarrassing him in front of him. He never know when I'm coming. I told him, I'll break his neck.
Well, you have to say it. I don't understand why a boy would want to dress up like a jailhouse sissy. I mean, look, let's lay it on the line, AJ. That whole thing of the pants falling down is a mark of submission that comes from the jailhouse culture. Am I right or wrong about that?
Savage, but that never do. We as parents have to let this happen. These parents that lost their freaking minds. And the church, I'm telling you what, when they took the Bible out of everything and all these churches didn't come together, every church, I don't care if you're bad, whatever, you should have came together and said, no, we built this country on this, and this is what it's going to be, and leave it at that. We done chopped it up. You don't even
believe
it.
You know, you're right. When they took out the hardline teachings of the Bible out of the church started to die, because then they opened it up to any behavior. So what's the point of going to the church? I mean, we all know we're sinners. That's a given. No one has a halo. We understand that. But you need someone to lay down the law and say, man, we're all no good, and we're all going you know where unless we straighten out. Otherwise, why go in there?
No, we going straight. Look at our country, man. Don't nobody respect us no more. We ain't about nothing to them little pop poops over there. You know that?
AG, you and I are old school. We're from another universe.
I mean, it just don't make sense. And the people in America running around here with their high material stuff, and is this stuff ain't going to be around if they keep letting these people take over?
Yeah, well, I hear you, AJ. You and I agree on everything. I don't know what to say to you other than somebody's not getting the message. I'm getting it. You're getting it. But someone else isn't. We'll just have to wait and see as the Democrats implode with their corruption. Anyway, I want to thank you for being a listener to the show, AJ. Let me send you a gift. I'll tell you what. You prefer the Political Zoo or a Savage Nation hat? Which do you want?
Mike, I take that Political Zoo, sir, because that is the most... I've never seen...
You got it. Stay on the line. You're getting a free copy of the Political Zoo. It's still a great book. It really is. And you deserve it.
Savage.
I stopped watching, like, history and archaeology because they're all dead. I started joking about it on the show about a year ago, if you remember. I was getting really, like, morbid. Talk about like mummies they dig up from 5,000 years ago. The guy, they can't even leave the mummy alone from Egypt? If the oil was put into burying that guy, who gives them the right to dig up a mummy and put it on display? It's disgusting. I don't even like to be displayed alive in a public appearance, never mind after you're dead. You talk about the ultimate disgrace is to dig up a dead body and inspect it, you know? So then you look at a Roman and all the Caesars for Rome. They're all dead. Grand plan. They ran this country. They ran that country. They had the power over every woman they ever saw. Now bring her in. Bring the Hebrew in. I want to see the Hebrew. He's causing trouble down there in the Semitic region. Bring the Hebrew to me. You know, I mean, they had ultimate power. Who, Hebrew, come forth here. I am the Caesar of the region. Hebrew, how dare you cause trouble in our provinces? Why are you bringing up this god of yours, Hebrew? Hebrew, come forth. What? You are stiff-necked? Cut the Hebrew's head off. Dead. They're all dead. No matter what power they had. Gone. I mean, what's the difference? See, if you understand that, we're really, in that sense, it really cuts the vanity out of the whole picture. Because no matter who you are, no matter how high you rise, at the end of the day, if you are lucky, if you're lucky enough not to die of, let's say, a stroke in the middle of a sentence, heart attack, car wreck, a murder, and you are lucky enough to live to the ripe old age of, let's say, 79, and things start to break down, then you get the double pleasure of being put into a nursing home, and your children don't come and see you. The attendants beat you about the head and neck with not blunt objects and no one could see it. They torture you. They steal your small bills. They hurt you. They scare you. Then they take your wheelchair, push it against the curtain while no one's looking, and leave you there for 3 hours at a time in a wet diaper. That's what you got to look forward to. You got to laugh at it all at a certain point. My most recent worst nightmare is this. It's not even Islamofascists blowing off a bomb in San Francisco. It's like if I get very old and I live that long and I go into an old age home here and they're all liberals and everybody in there worked for the San Francisco Chronicle or the local television stations or the phony newspaper or the other papers in the rain, and I'm the only conservative in the old age home. I have this repetitive nightmare that they're chasing me down a hall. I'm in a wheelchair and they're in wheelchairs and crutches. And they got like transfusion trees, and they're ghostly. They look like Arlen Specter. And they're all coming after me. Savage, we're going to get you. You fascist, what you did to San Francisco. And here they come with the transfusion trees and the urine on their – it's horrible. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
So what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about dogs. We could talk about cars, dogs, drag racing on the connecting highway in Queens, spilling gasoline on the highway, leaving rubber for 200 feet on it. That's when America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. That was a different country. When you stepped on the gas and you had 2 4-barrel carburetors and the fuel spilled all over the gutter and it stank and it left a rubber strip and there was no such thing as an environmentalist that you worried about. And the car fishtailed, and you sped down the highway illegally, and you prayed to God the other guy's arm got caught in the door, like in The Rebel Without a Cause, and he went over the cliff. That was a country that I liked. Today, everyone drives around psychologically in a hybrid car. Basically, we're driving around like in a straitjacket. We're driving around like in a hybrid mind, where it's what you think is one part of your mind, or what the government tells you to think is the other part of your mind. You're half a man. Today, you're half a man of what your father was. And I don't care if you have triple the money. You're half the man. Do you know that? I don't care if you have quadruple the money. You're half the man your father was. He thought freely. He spoke freely. We walk around with a zipper on our mouth. All of us have been curtailed by the perverts and the demons.
Savage.
Seattle, Washington. Ryan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I wanted to talk about the dogs. That's more interesting than anything else that we're covering.
Yeah, it is. Dogs are interesting. Well, I'm a dog person.
Yeah, you said that the dogs are allowed anywhere other than where food is served. And I just wanted to let you know, up here in Washington, I'm not sure whether it's a state law or federal law, but you are not allowed to ask a customer whether their dog is for service or not. They can simply say, I need this dog with me.
In other words, if you ask them if they're a legitimate service dog, you may make one of the fake psychos nervous, and you could affect their condition. They could sue you, right?
Exactly.
In Washington State, that's where they do animals, right? That's where they did the horses.
Hey, exactly. And I'm serving there one Friday night.
What if you're working in a restaurant and a man comes in with a horse in Seattle? Can you come to any conclusion with that? What if he says, this is my service animal?
Well, I don't think we're far off the way things are going.
Yeah, you have a great governor, a terrific governor in the state of Washington. Great, great mayor in the state of Seattle, in the city of Seattle. Terrific place. So what, you're a waiter up there? What happened?
Hey, the first weekend that happened, I'm wondering, what in the world is going on? A dog's in here. You know, I'm allergic to cats. Somebody could be allergic to dogs.
Oh, my God. A cat in a restaurant, I never go back. I'm allergic to cats. I hate them.
Next weekend, I swear.
I hate cats. My throat closes up.
Customers saw that dog in there. The next weekend, three dogs are in there at the same time. And I'm sitting here wondering if
now, what happens if a dog takes a dump under a table? Tell me, you have to clean it up?
Hey, we got to clean up the puke in the bathroom, right?
Oh, my God. Do they make waiters clean up the bathrooms?
Yep.
Oh, no. Ryan, I think that's a violation of your rights as an employee. I don't believe a waiter should have to clean up a vomit in a bathroom.
We'll put up with it till we move on to something better, right?
Yeah, let's get off this topic. This is getting crazy. But, no, I see where you're coming from. But in Seattle, if a man comes in with a horse, you don't know what they're doing together. He could say it's a service animal.
Well, and...
What if he says it's his partner?
You know, I don't know that the law doesn't cover that. We might not be
able to... Oh, yeah, well, the law, you know... Samuel Johnson, the great 18th century English essayist, said the law is an ass. He pretty much knew what the law was. You know who writes the law, don't you? You know who writes the law. That it brings up a very good point. No, this dog and restaurant thing is out of control. Only I should be able to bring my dog to a restaurant because he's self-controlled. He does not pee in a restaurant. He doesn't even bark. But I could see why it's a problem. You get that woman, like that Gertz woman up in that department store, you know that her dogs will bark. And if you say one word to her, she'll threaten to sue with that mouth of hers. She probably was a lawyer or was married to a lawyer her whole life. Thanks for the call.
Savage.
So I'm reading the paper this morning, the electronic paper. Italy's new dining experience, high security. Rome. Diners are flocking to what could be called the most exclusive restaurant in Italy. One located inside a top security prison where the chefs and waiters are mafiosi, robbers and murderers. Serenaded by Bruno, a pianist doing life for murder, the clientele eat inside a deconsecrated chapel set behind a 60-foot high. Why would they deconsecrate a chapel? Anyway, set behind the 60-foot high walls of the daunting 500-year-old Fortezza Medicea at Volterra near Pisa. Under the watchful eye of armed prison guards, a 20-strong team of chefs, kitchen hands, and waiters nightly serve 120 diners who all have undergone strict security checks. Tables are booked weeks in advance. Prison director Maria Grazia Giampiccolo said the inmates have developed a flair for their cooking. He said, I feel haute cuisine in a place like this prepares the inmates for when they are eventually released. The guests enjoy their meals, and although the security seems at first very daunting and imposing, they get over it quite quickly and forget about the guards. The mafia may be in charge, but there is no horse's head on this menu. Instead, a smart, mainly middle-aged crowd tucks into a vegetarian signature menu cooked up by head chef Egidio, serving life for murder and competitively priced at $33. The restaurant opened 2 months ago and has proved so popular that Italy's prison department is thinking of trying it in other prisons. I got to laugh for a minute because this can only happen in Italy, where food is life. Now, if you went to a prison in America and you had the criminals in this country cooking, can you imagine what you wind up eating? Jell-O. You'd eat Jell-O and candy bars. That would be their idea of haute cuisine. It's not Italy. Securing a table is as tricky as getting past the sternest maitre d'. Diners are thoroughly vetted by the blah, blah, blah. But there's no danger of the meal being disrupted by the annoying chirrup of cell phones. You hear this? They have to be handed in. Oh, I'd love to eat in this joint. along with handbags, and I would like to eat here. If only I could go to a restaurant where some idiot moron from hell didn't talk on a phone. Blah, 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 I'm so important. And yeah, I'm going to Zurich. Yeah, I just got back from Atlanta. Yeah, I spoke to blah, 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 blah. I feel like pouring coffee into their cell phone. Why do they let them even talk? It's one of the reasons I go to restaurants. I can't listen to people. I'm in a talk business. So when I'm through working, I don't want to listen to chatter. But most people have jobs where they can't talk. So what they do is they have a glass of wine already for $6. Blah, 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 blah. I shoot their mouth. I give them two glasses of wine. They don't shut up. Then you get hit with a bad perfume on top of it all that wafts over and you got a double migraine and there's no point in eating there. Give me this prison. It sounds like a good place to go. Handbag. The diners go through the same thing. In the kitchen, Egidio, a burly 50-year-old from Toronto and Southern, reigns over his team of six chefs. He screams, "The pasta is boiling over. More salt, less garlic. Keep stirring the pasta sauce," he shouts. 17 years into his sentence, he is thinking of going into the restaurant business when they finally let him out. Like any Italian, I take my food very, very seriously. I like to be sure the diners are satisfied. And they don't just enjoy the food, but enjoy it with the same passion that I prepare it. Wow, the guy sounds more articulate than George Bush. He's in for a murder sentence. He's a prisoner in Italy. Maybe we could elect him to office here. He could form an entire sentence. Perhaps unsurprisingly, given his record, diners have been reluctant to criticize. He said, "Before this, I couldn't even fry an egg. But now here I am preparing 5-course dinners, and I have not had any complaints." It could be because they know who he is. "Yo, it's delicious, DJ. Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah, it's great. Terrific. Yeah, tell him that his food's no good." Most of the dishes the restaurant serves are Southern Italian staples from organized crime hotspots like Puglia, Sicily, and Naples. Sommelier Santolo Matroni from Naples landed behind bars after getting into, quote, a spot of bother when he was younger, which earned him a 24-year sentence for murder. He, too, is hoping to use his new skills when he gets out in about 7 years. He says, "I'd like to think that when I get out of here, I can start a family, maybe get a job in a restaurant or hotel. Hey, you should come to America. You know, it's the kind of immigrant we need."
Savage.